Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 396-0577 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how you doing?
Happy that the weather has cooled off.
It is a lot better than we were a couple weeks ago. That is
feels
for sure.
Like 80.
Yeah, it get a little breeze going here and there, and yeah, it's been very, very nice. We have with us in studio our resident in-house lending specialist, Mr. Tom Coyne with Umpqua. Tom, how are you?
You know, I'm doing fantastic. I myself am very happy it cooled down. It feels almost refreshing outside.
Absolutely. No, yeah, we took a little bit of time off last week and went up to the mountains for a little while and escaped some of it, so it was even a little bit cooler up there. But good to be back and cranking away at things. And yeah, it just makes it that much easier when we are out and about, for sure. So we always like to start off with our crazy either celebrity house or kind of our national real estate of the week home. And this, I had to read this article twice because I didn't believe it the first time. But this is up in Connecticut, a property that's on the market. And this is five bedrooms, five baths, 7,000 square foot home. But here's the thing about it that I thought was just incredible. It was a 1756 colonial home.
Wow.
Built in 1756. So 17 years ago, this couple bought the house. And here's the part of the story that I'm not even sure how this made it in the story, but I just thought it was interesting is there was an addition slash remodel done on the 80s, but it had such a weak foundation that the floor was falling through. Now, the article said the floor fell through when one of the donkeys was in the kitchen. And I said, wait a minute. What, you mean a person? What is it? First of all, number one, what's a donkey doing in the kitchen?
Well, he's making eggs and toast.
Absolutely. But this couple, apparently, as part of their estate, they rescued donkeys. So it was a rescue donkey. And it had somehow gotten into the kitchen area because the house, this portion of this house was in such bad shape. But these folks went through, completely redid it. They had not updated the plumbing or the wiring since back in the 1930s. I mean, it was overgrown with vegetation. Most people, she said, that looked at the house said that it should have been torn down. It would have been cheaper to tear it down than it was to restore it the way they did, but that wasn't their intent. They wanted to preserve that history. And I think a lot of times in the U.S. and kind of our culture, it's very difficult to find something that is that old in the first place, much less a residence-type home. So pretty cool to look at all the pictures and stuff and see that people out there taking a shot at restoring some of that history and keeping that, you know, in our culture. Little bit different setup this week. So last week we got so carried away with talking about Zillow and Zestimates and stuff that I missed the pick three, which totally happened. So we're getting a ton of new inventory on right now, which we have not had for the last couple months. I mean, it seems like, you know, there was lower inventory. We were in that 800 range. We're starting to see a little bit of that build back up and pick up to a more sustainable level. But we've got some fantastic new listings on the market. So pick number one that I've got is 6011 Collins Road out in West Richland. Great, great custom-built four-bedroom, five-bath home. And this sits on 1.25 acre. So this place is almost 4,000 square feet. Great layout for entertaining. Large kitchen open to the family room. You've got tile backsplash, stainless steel appliances, all of the updates. You've got an expansive master suite, so you've got a huge walk-in closet. And then it's one of those big masters that basically has its own living room attached to the master bedroom. Fantastic property. And then on the other side of the house, you have a second master or a guest suite that has its own entrance from the garage. So great, great property. And on that acreage, West Richland, coming in at $385,000. So that's a fantastic listing. Pick number two that I've got in Richland, North Richland, 2329 Ferndale Avenue. So this is a four-bedroom, three-bath Rambler with a basement. You've got that great North Richland location. 2,727 square feet, large living room. You've got hardwood floors, masonry fireplace. They've done the updates, so you've got the granite counters, the tile backsplash. Just a fantastic property. You've got a sunroom with a wet bar and a slider that goes to a large deck with a private, fully fenced backyard. So this is an easy commute for that kind of that North Richland Hanford worker that's out there. You can walk to the Columbia River from the house, and that's coming in at $265,000. So, you know, anybody that's job transferring in or going to work out in the area, maybe you've been commuting too far, this is a great, great property. Pick number three, we've also got up in Richland, and this is really kind of just your estate quality view home. This is 1402 White Bluff Street in Richland, and this is a five-bedroom, four-bath Rambler with a basement up in Westcliff. Hardwood floors, large great room with gas fireplace. It's open to a huge, huge kitchen with a big island. You've got a slider out to the deck, and then this view is absolutely incredible. So panoramic views. You get views up and down the Columbia River, which are just absolutely gorgeous. The master has tons of tile, soaking tub, dual sink vanity, large shower, and then downstairs in the basement, you've got the big entertaining family room, two more bedrooms, plus you've got basically almost another full kitchen. You've kind of got that wet bar, entertaining kitchen area, all downstairs on its own level. So fantastic property, and that's coming in that neighborhood at $550,000. So there is some great, great new inventory coming on the market, and we're going to see some of that. And in fact, that was part of the topic for today. So one of the things Tom and I are doing is we're looking around what's going on in the market and what can we bring with that experience to the radio show as a topic. And one of the things that happens right now, and we kind of look at this each year and this time of year, is we talk about what happens if my house didn't sell in the spring market. So we've seen, you know, we've kind of finished up that late spring, early summer market. Everybody's heard, gosh, this is an amazing real estate market. Things are hot in the Tri-Cities. Days on the market are down. This is the time to sell. But what happens if you're sitting there and you're like, you know what, mine didn't sell? What the heck is going on? And so I put together kind of a couple pointers and a checklist to go over that. And we had a great example of this last week. We had a house that had been on the market with another agent for 4 months. No sale. They had had some of the showings, they said. And we went in and said, the clients called me and we said, what's going on here? Come take a look at the house. We're just trying to figure this out. We're building a new house. We need to get into it. What are we going to do here? So we came out and took a look at it. And the first thing that I said is, well, here's your market. And I only had six homes on that list. Mm. And the client's like, what do you mean? That's my market. And I said, well, this is the square footage of your house, the roughly the size of lot that it's on. In this area of Richland, what we've had is over the last 6 months, we've had six sales. Okay, so that's not a lot. And they're like, oh my gosh. And so what we really have to do sometimes is look at the micro market, as I call it, versus the macro market versus the major. So they might have heard, yeah, things are, you know, rosy, everything's perfect in Tri-Cities, things are selling. But when it comes down to it, homes like theirs, only one a month was selling. Not so that's not great odds, right, when we're looking at the whole thing. So the next thing I had to look at and say, okay, now that we know that we're dealing with a micro market, because of that, we have to be really, really competitive. And so we had to sit down and say, I said, you know what? See that big burn spot out in the front of your lawn? It's the first thing people see when they drive up. And they're like, but yeah, Lance, there's a drought. You did a radio show on it 3 weeks ago. You know, there's nothing we can do to help that. And I said, well, we can if we spend a little bit of money. So, you know, we had to get some extra water out on there. We had to change a little bit of their watering schedule. And we had to get that thing greened back up. It's amazing. In like a week and a half, bam, perfectly greened back up. Next thing I said is, I said, you know, these bushes out here are crazy. The front yard we walk up to, these bushes are just out of control. We need to get those all trimmed up. We can't see out this back window. We need to trim that up. And there's weeds growing here. I said, I know it's hot outside. I know it's been, you know, at this time point, we had been 102 for 3 or 4 weeks. But I said, we've got to take care of these things because only one a month is selling in this range. When people come here, this has to be the one. And so that's a very different perspective than, hey, we're going to sell our house. What's out there? Throw it out there. So lo and behold, we got all of that stuff changed, and it was work, too. I mean, it was great. These are great sellers. They just busted it, got all the work done. Back on the market, new pictures, updated. Someone's calling about the pick three. I forgot to turn my phone off. They're calling about the pick three.
Lance never stops.
I'm going to have to return that voicemail when we get off the air. So one of the pick threes is sold, just so everybody knows that someone's calling.
Right there, folks.
Okay.
I was watching.
Okay, so back to where I was at. We got that house on the market. 4 showings in the first couple days, and that thing is sold. And so, you know, there's tweaks like that that don't always happen. And sometimes we just have to sit down and say, be very, very realistic about what we're working with and dealing with there. We can make those changes and help get those things going. The next thing that I wrote down that might have happened, and I hear this a lot when I'm going back to doing an evaluation for people, talking to people about this, is number one, and I wrote down, not taking your first buyer seriously. Okay, this is a big mistake that can happen in these markets, especially like this. People get a little bit overconfident with what's going on. We price a house very, say, at the top end of the market pricing that I think we can get to. We get a first buyer that comes in, they make maybe a decent offer, but not a great offer. Instead of negotiating with that buyer, maybe a seller just says, you know what, I'm not going to negotiate with them. This is the price I'm at. That's all I'm going to take. And instead of negotiating, maybe walks away from that first buyer. Well, the thing about first offer buyers is that in general, they are the most serious and highly motivated. If you usually get an offer very quickly like that from buyer, one of a couple things is happening. Number one, they might be neighborhood specific. They might be that buyer that for one reason or another, their parents live down the street. They want to be in a certain school district. That they came in and they have been waiting for a house to come up in that neighborhood. And meaning that is why they're coming so quickly and coming in with a decent offer. Negotiate with that first buyer. You never know where they're going to end up to coming to, where you're going to be able to bring them to on the spectrum of a higher price. But a lot of times that first buyer has hidden agendas that you as a seller don't know about. And so negotiating with that first buyer seriously can totally help your chances of getting that thing sold. I've seen too many times where we have a first buyer offer in the first week and then we potentially we don't see another offer for a month or two, and that really changes the game with what you're able to get. So that's the first couple tips that we've gone over there as we look at why didn't my house sell in the early spring summer market. We are about to have another spike in activity. This is what happens year after year. We come across where you have a little bit slower start to the beginning of the July market. The heat now is going to start to dissipate a little bit. People are coming back from vacations. We're about to enter our second time period of the super hot Tri-Cities market. And that is that August to October is just going to be a barn burner. Tom's resting up right now because he can see all the loan applications I'm about to send his way. So a couple more tips after the break for preparing for the second hot season of the market in Tri-Cities. When we come back,
right here on News Talk 870.
The Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking about prepping here a little bit for an increase in activity and the kind of the second half of the real hot selling season and buying season here in the Tri-Cities. So we've been going over some tips of what might have happened if my house didn't sell in the first high season that we had and how we can be prepared and avoid those mistakes in the second half of that season. One of the keys that we're always dealing with, constantly fighting and talking with about the show, is dealing with the money side, making sure our buyers are pre-approved and coming with those letters from a local lender that really gets the job done. And I gotta say that, you know, Tom and his team at Umpqua, before I let him talk, is that it's just they're so dependable. And when it comes to your money and your finances, I gotta say that that is just a blessing. We've had, again, I could probably say this every month, but we've had a run of three or four different out-of-town lenders, other lenders that just have missed their closing dates, have missed some of the details in the transaction, and it's just nice that we have a partner locally that we don't have to worry about that stuff. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tom. And Tom, what's going on with money that we should know about?
Well, Lance, thank you for that. You know, we try to just be consistent, and if you set up your systems and you do the same thing on every single file, you shouldn't have the mistakes. Thank you. But we always try to tie our show together. And you're talking about people who maybe have their house listed for sale and it hasn't sold yet. Well, maybe those people already have an offer on our next house and they're wondering, what are our options? We don't want to lose the next house. So that's what I want to talk about.
Common issue and practice that we come across. Also, a lot of those folks want to make an offer on the perfect house they found, and the sellers can't or are unwilling to take a contingent offer. So that would help us avoid that situation.
Yeah, so there's some different guidelines that we run into. If someone's wanting to make an offer on a new house and purchase that new home non-contingent of their current house selling, one is it's just a lot easier for the people buying the new house because they don't have to move on the same day that someone else is moving into their house. It gives them a little bit more time. Maybe it gives them more time to clean the house up or get their stuff out. But the different guidelines we run into, the most important one is debt to income. So you need to be able to qualify with both house payments. Even if you say, well, we're going to sell the house, that's our intention, the bank looks at everything worst case. What if that house doesn't sell? And then you're carrying both of these house payments. So the most important thing, you got to qualify with both house payments. Now, most loan programs, you have to be under 45% debt to income. So debt to income is just the money you're sending out versus what you're bringing in. And so you just take the prospective house payment, current house payment, and any other debts that would show up on your credit report. So this isn't going to include your cell phone or your utilities or your cable bill, nothing like that. Just your credit cards, student loans, auto loans. You take all those and the prospective house payment and you divide that by your gross income. If that number is under 45%, then you should be okay. That's just one part of it. But debt to income, again, is one of the major things we're going to look at if you're trying to purchase non-contingent. Now, the next thing you have is a reserve requirement. And This is a Fannie Mae requirement, so it's going to apply to every bank out there. But you have to document that you have 6 months reserves on the new house as well as your current house. So when I say reserves, that's a house payment. How many months of payments do you have in your bank account? If your house payment is $1,000 a month, you need to have $6,000 in there to meet this reserve requirement. Now, a lot of people, though, don't have $30,000 to cover 6 months reserves on this house and 6 months on the other, but they have $30,000 in retirement. So a lot of times we'll just get a retirement account statement. And as long as we can document that under some form of hardship, you're able to withdraw that money, we'll count your retirement funds as reserves. So that is a good option to be able to get those reserves. Now, let's say this new house you're going to buy, you just want to put the minimum amount down to be able to buy that home. And then when you sell your current home, you're going to have some extra money. Maybe you have an extra $30,000 in proceeds that you want to apply to the new loan. A lot of people want to see that payment go down on the new house once they apply this extra principal. But the only way to do that is either refinance, which again, you're going to have all those new closing costs. Maybe rates are up at that time, so you're leaving your low rate, going to a higher rate. Or you can recast the loan. So a really nice feature that we have on all of our loans is the recast. At any given time, if you're putting at least 10% of the current balance down, you can recast those payments, which will recalculate the monthly payment based off of the new balance at that time. So it's great for somebody who's going to have a large chunk of money after they sell their current house to apply on the new one, and they don't have to go through the $4,000 in closing costs for the refinance. I want to say our recast is $300. And you
That's a great option.
It really is.
I mean, so that way, if you're maybe expecting an inheritance or something, you're just saying that it is minimum 10% of the outstanding balance. If you pay more than that off, then they'll keep your interest rate the same.
Absolutely.
But they'll recalculate those payments on the new balance over the life of the loan.
Exactly. So let's say you had a 30-year loan originally, 6 months have gone by, so now you have 29.5-year loan. We're going to recalculate those payments so it still pays off in the same amount of time, just based off of that new balance.
Wow, that is fantastic, especially in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of the things that we always kind of keep in our back pocket for this situation where someone says, oh, I just really can't afford this new house payment. And we say, well, could you afford it for 3 or 4 months until your current house sells? And then all of a sudden it opens that door and I can buy that house non-contingent now. So great option for people to keep in mind. Now, let's say you're not trying to sell your current house. Maybe you want to convert it to a rental property. One of the things that you can do is calculate the rental income, prospective rental income on the house you're vacating to help you qualify for the new home. But in order to do that, you have to document that you have 30% equity in the property. So if you have a property that's worth, say, $100,000 and you owe $65,000 on it, then you have 35% equity and you can use the rental income on your current home to help you qualify for the next house. Now, this rule applies to homes that you are simultaneously vacating and purchasing a new home. So let's say if you don't have 30% equity, maybe you consider getting that house rented out, have a renter move in, you got rental checks that you can document, you got the security deposit, you got the lease agreement, and you go and live with family for 3 months. Well, now all your mail is going to the new address. We know you're not living at that previous home anymore. That 30% equity rule will go away. And now you have that rental income to help you qualify for the next house. So there's all these different scenarios that we run into, and it's different for every person. So the most important thing is when you're thinking you're ready to buy a house, you want to see what your options are. Let's sit down and talk, and we'll make the best game plan to get you into your new house.
Tom, that's really, really good information. Thanks for bringing that in. And that, like I said, that's really applicable to this market because those are situations that we run into. And a lot of times, you know, there's multiple contingencies. So, you know, we ran into this with a few properties in the last couple of weeks where the seller had made an offer contingent upon selling their home. So they had got an accepted contingent offer. New buyer comes along and says, gosh, we'd buy it at that price, but we have a home to sell. Well, the first seller can't be contingent on a contingent. So he won't be able to do that. And so his options, whether he wanted to or not, are really limited. So that in buyer would have to make that decision of either having their house listed and sold or potentially doing what you said and qualifying for that second mortgage. So options that are real with what we're seeing in the market. Very, very good information. A couple more tips that we have here that I'm going over of why maybe did my house not sell in the previous market. So the next tip that I had written down, and that was number one, that was making highly personal changes to your home. This is a mistake that we see happen many, many times, and it can really hinder a sale. It is the seller that is a member of the rock band on the weekends and has converted the entire three-car garage to a music studio and insulated all the walls.
John might like that
John
house.
John might
or
like
they
that.
Turned the extra bedroom into a weight room.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so their question is what comes and what they say is like, well, I think I should just leave it that way because somebody else might want it that way. Well, that's an interesting concept, and when that is the world that you live in, that is potentially the case. But 90% of the buyers will potentially actually want that three-car garage, would see it as a hindrance and an expense to remove it all. And so that highly personal change, you have to make a decision up front. Do I put that back the way it was, appeal to the other 90% of the market, or do I risk leaving it for that 10%? Well, when we just look at the numbers, many times we have to make that hard decision of, yeah, you've invested that money, but we need to get this converted back. So we see a lot of times those highly personal changes that people have made to the homes, and it can really hinder the sale of the home. And a lot of times I come in and it's the second or third person in giving this advice, and I say, okay, gosh, here's the deal. You know, I know that you wanted no maintenance, and so you put all gravel in the front and the back of your yard. That's wonderful if you travel all the time and never have to take care of it. But we've now gone and we have taken out of the market 70% of the people that might be in the market that have kids or want grass or enjoy grass in their backyard. I mean, so we have to make that decision. Are we going to ignore that 70% of the market? And in general, we either have to make that adjustment with price, or a lot of times not only price, it won't just do it itself. People have to be able to see it to envision it. It's rare. There's a couple people out there in our society that have that major artistic mind and can mm-hmm. see that vision of what it would look like and how it'll turn out. We in general don't always have that same vision as humans. And so a lot of times people need to see what it would look like before they can make a choice. It's the same reason why model homes work so well. If you see a model home with a builder and you go in and you see all the furnishings and you see how it's been decorated, a lot of times folks will say, this is fantastic. They might never pick those things on their own themselves, but they see it all put together and they'll say, you know what, let's write up a contract. I want to build this exact same model house. I love it.
You know, Lance, for your example with the guy without the yard and he's got gravel, do you ever go out and get a contractor and get a bid and say, hey, we have the bid, this will get done, but we'll do it at closing, we'll pay for it?
We absolutely do, but sometimes it's too much. The vision,
you just can't vision it.
People
got it.
Just can't see it. And so we talk a lot about curb appeal and that first impression. And so they'll come up and they will discount it, even though they said it'll be done. Maybe they need to move in 25 days or something. They don't think it can get done in time. That it's amazing what that finished vision looks like in mm-hmm. comparison. So that's one of the things that we're constantly looking at. The next item that I wrote down was making your home difficult to show. This can be a huge issue. You can have the best home, but when it comes to selling, if you're not extremely flexible with the showings, a lot of times that can hinder a sale. It's crazy because people will be like, gosh, what's the difference between a Saturday showing at noon and Monday at 6 after work? You know, can't we just push it till when I'm gone to work? Well, the problem is a lot of times when it's amazing when people make a decision and they're going to do something, they go for it. So, you know, we have buyers all the time. They're like, we're going to buy a house. We want to go see 12 houses Saturday and Sunday, and we're going to write an offer Sunday night. I mean, that's just normal. You know, when we mm-hmm. get people that are very serious and ready to make a decision, if you can't see the house in those time periods, you're going to lose out on potential sales. And so that is being, I know it's a pain. I mean, I'm right there with people. You know, most people want to see a house win, right? When they get off work at six, the exact same time you want to be cooking dinner for your family. So do you really want to leave the house, you know, four nights in a week from 6 to 8:30? Well, I guess, you know, I guess you're going to eat out a lot that week, you know, but it happens. And that flexibility can really become the difference in a sale. So that's one of the major things I wrote down. I know we're going to run it. We always run out of time on shows like this because there's so much to talk about. The last item I wanted to get in is just, are you spending enough on marketing the home? What is the budget for the marketing? How much is being spent on getting the word out there? A lot of these sites nowadays are what I call pay to play. So Zillow, Trulia, Facebook, these sites are out there, but it takes premium placement on these sites that costs a lot of marketing dollars to get to the right positions.
Same analogy as Google.
Absolutely. Getting the return of, are you on page one or page two? When was the last time you picked something on page two of Google? If you were looking for a restaurant, or you're in a city and you type something in and you say, gosh, where's a great place to eat? You know, great place to eat, you know, in Seattle or Chicago or, you know, Ellensburg. I never go to page two of Google. Mm-mm. It's results one, two, or three. Houses, John, thank you for that analogy, work exactly the same way. What houses came up on page one, two, or three, not 29 or 30? So what's the marketing budget? How's that affecting the ability of people to see the homes? There is an amazing time period coming up. We've got our Tri-Cities, August to October, hot time frame. We are going to be extremely busy working with lots of buyers and sellers. There's a big push for us to get a lot of those sales done before interest rates go up towards the end of this year. If you have any questions about that, feel free to go to our website, kenmoreteam.com. Shoot us some information. Tom, for people to get pre-approved before rates go up higher, how do they get a hold of you?
Give me a call, 783-7300. Love to chat with you.
And we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.